one lesson learned, you really need to stay focused and stay on the course of what you believe in. And otherwise, if you keep pivoting with not a central theme, you definitely were going to fail.
Welcome to Speaking of Business, conversations with Canadian innovators, entrepreneurs, and business leaders. I'm Goldie Hyder, President and CEO of the Business Council of Canada. In a few days, MPs will return to Ottawa and Canada's 44th Parliament will begin. There's a lot of work ahead for elected officials, not the least of which is charting a course for the economy as the country recovers from the COVID-19 pandemic. How has the economic landscape changed during the health crisis? What does Canada need to do to spur economic growth in a post-pandemic world? And do we have the right ingredients that are necessary to succeed? John Chen thinks a lot about the future and adapting to change. As executive chairman and CEO of BlackBerry, he's led the storied Canadian company through massive transformation, moving it from an organization focused on hardware to one at the leading edge of software. I wanted to hear his thoughts on Canada's economic transformation. I caught up with him in early November. Welcome to the podcast, John.
Thank you. Thank you, Goldie.
Well, look, let me just full disclosure here. Like, people in the heydays of BlackBerry thought I was born with a BlackBerry in hand. I mean, these things are inseparable in nation's capitals, I find. And it's such a great Canadian story, but it's transformed a lot under your leadership. But let's talk a little bit about the BlackBerry that people should have a lot of pride in, that they should care about. It's still Canadian, right, John?
Yes, very much so. We still headquarter in Waterloo and very close to the University of Waterloo, which is a tremendous long-term partners of ours for over 30 plus years. And, the majority of all our employees are still in Canada. Mm-hmm. And so we're very proud to be a Canadian company.
And so Canadians should take pride in the fact that there remains in Canada a global champion, but it's a global champion. You have a footprint around the world still.
Yeah, I haven't counted the number of countries, and we do business in Europe, obviously, Middle East. We do business in Asia and quite a footprint in the United States. So, yes, we're very global in nature. And we also have one of the pride and joy is we have a lot of, I'm sure we'll get to it, but a lot of industry position that is number one for the Canadian iconic company.
Mm-hmm. I still have my BlackBerry Hub, which I love. It's a great invention that allows you to consolidate all of your programs. And, you know, I'm always trying to convince my kids to use it. What should young people know about BlackBerry, and particularly young Canadian people know about BlackBerry? Why should they understand the BlackBerry story?
That's interesting. I think BlackBerry has a long history. And like you pointed out, we had a very successful early start in the communication world. You remember before the cell phone, I don't know if you ever used a pager.
Yes.
Do you remember a pager? It's kind of the badge of honor, I still remember, when we're in business, that you have to be somebody important to be able to wear one of these things. And then you got these short messages and all this good stuff. So anyway, Canadian young people should really aspire to how a small startup, you know, literally in a second floor of this little building in Waterloo that became a mega global icon in communication, and especially in the heyday of the cell phone. And then we should also learn our lessons in, you know, how we get disconnected to the market and who the principal buyers are. It shifted throughout our history. And then it got us into a little bit of a jam. And I came into the company at that time and tried to restart the company with a different, you know, a much more broader market outlook and participate in a bigger addressable market, so to speak, and they don't want to use a lot of the technical term. So we have repositioned ourselves doing so. And that journey taking a little longer than I expected. And, you know, that's seen a lot of ups and downs, but has been quite rewarding. The company is in a very good position today, very strong financially, and back to being able to grow and reconquer the world, so to speak, again. So I think in there, there's a history in technology evolution, the history in marketing evolution, and there's also a history in industrial evolution. So lots to really learn from.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a turnaround story. It's a story of finding your way. It's a story of survival. I was with our mutual colleagues, Eric Martel, the CEO of Bombardier, and you kind of think about, he had to do a similar thing. You have to make some choices. You have to pick some lanes. But it shows what you and he have been able to do as leaders is to do exactly that. Pick a lane and be the best at it.
Yeah. Sometimes it's a little bit more difficult.
Sounds easy, but hard to do.
You know, there has been anxious moments. So anyway, yes, you're correct.
So you mentioned anxious moments. I mean, one of the things that, you know, when we think about BlackBerry and so many others is there's this perception sets in that Canadian startups, and particularly, you know, in the last 10, 20 years here, that they need to move from Canada to be successful, that they get wooed away from Canada. Do you believe that's the case? And if it is, what do we need to do to encourage more BlackBerries, if you will, to stay in Canada and grow in Canada?
Really good question. And I'm afraid the answer is not as simple as a couple of statements, but I do see that. I do see how you mentioned it and what you identified. I think this is certainly a multi-party solution. Part of the solution needs to come from the government policy. And that, by the way, involves immigrations, talents, retraining, the whole thing. And also very much need to focus on how to help Canadian company being successful overseas. If we have time, we'll get back to that topic. A big part of it is to do with the financial markets. And Canada, unfortunately, do not have risk-based money, so to speak. The venture capitalists, for example, are not, the market is not as vibrant. And maybe there's something that somebody could take a look at in the rules on the TSX. And maybe there's some inbuilt cultural factor that ought to take the risk. But let's strip it to the positive side. Canada has enormous amount of talent. In this world, if you look at why the China rises, for example, why United States is, could be falling behind in some areas, it's not a lack of innovation, it's a lack of talent, it's a lack of people who actually get the job done. And so talent training is very important. So I hate to see a constant exports of Canadian talents. And that's a different, much broader subject matter. But so there are the market factor, there are the risk-based money factor, there are the risk-reward factor, and there are the government policy that augment it. But one thing that's definitely working for the Canadians, you know, is closest to the biggest market in technology in the United States, is speak the same language. It has enormous amount of talent pool, and especially young people who are trained up in technology is very impressive.
You said something there that, you know, I mean, yes, on government policy, yes, on the risk assessments and you know, the role of capital formation, et cetera. But you also said the word culture. Is it something in the culture? You just kind of snuck that in there. What do you mean by that?
Well, I see a lot of very good people that are satisfied with a certain status quo. Not that they're not expanding to grow, but when they come to risk versus growing, there's some level of hesitation. So that's part of the culture I see. It's nothing wrong. It's just a matter of whether this is fitting to, you know, want to take over the world and conquer the world. You know,
but there's got to be a balance between those two, right? It's not settle for good enough, nor do you want to crush the world.
Yes.
Should we be more ambitious is my question.
I think we should. We should also be more accepting of people that fail.
Yes. Expand on that. What do you mean?
Well, I think there's just a cultural a norm, let me put use the word, the norm of people that, you know, we like people to stay more in the middle of the row and, you know, middle of the fairway. And, you know, they really don't get comfortable with people who are a little over the fringe. And this is more so than other culture that I have interacted with. I myself spent a lot of time in Silicon Valley. Now, Silicon Valley may be a flip side on the, you know, extreme on the other side. Mm-hmm. A lot of risk taking and so forth. But in the Silicon Valley world, in a venture capitalist world, you know, the people are more marketable if they have failed before, because, you know, they don't want to put money behind somebody who actually doesn't know how difficult things are. So as you pointed out, probably don't want to go extreme on either side. And I would strongly advise that we have a much more of a little bit more of a risk taking culture in Canada. Now, one of the areas I want to point out if you look at our education systems in Canada, we don't really train up a lot of people who have an international appetite. We do train up a lot of skill and talents, especially in engineering. But in business school, for example, if I offended any of the...
You're spot on. So keep going.
Yeah, if I offended anybody, I apologize up front. But, you know, if I want to find a VP of global marketing of some sort, Canada doesn't have a lot of pool for us to pick from. And I really encourage on the educator side that focus on maybe more of an international, a global curriculum of sorts. And that will really be helpful. We need more talent, so more business. Technical talents are great, but we need to complement that with business talent that are not just financial, somebody who knows, you know, income statements and cash flow. Yes, we very much need these people for sure, but we also need another group of people that do global marketing.
Well, I've often said for all the talk about STEM, I would add the A and make it STEAM, right? Yeah. When I talk to so many of our members in the Business Council, they always talk about the need for people who can think, people who can write, people who can learn, people who appreciate history. So there's a shout out for all the arts grads out there, which will make them happy, I'm sure, and full bias of my own self-disclosed. We could talk up forever about this topic, yeah. John, when we get on the culture of Canada. And a lot of it has to do, I suspect, with the complacency of being surrounded by the G1. Living with the strongest economy makes life pretty easy for all of us, doesn't it?
That's interesting. Wait, I never thought about it that way. But yes, that's true.
Well, let's go to the issue that you have mentioned a number of times here now, and that is the whole bucket of talent, skills, reskilling, immigration. I mean, when we talk to our members and survey them, the number one issue, even before COVID, certainly COVID's made it that much more important, is the labor shortage and talent misalignment, skills mismatch. Is this a moment where we're going to look back and really take advantage, you think, of our immigration policy? And how does business and government work together to solve this problem?
Yeah, the immigration policy of Canada, first of all, for full disclosure, I mean, I've only been involved with the really working with Canada and in Canada and with Canadians and in a very, you know, day-to-day, everyday way. I only did this for 7 years. So by no means I'm an expert on the subject. But I would say that I have always been quite impressed with the Canadian immigration policy. It's organized, it's sensible, maybe a little bit more expensive to it now that global talent is the key ingredient of success. We could be a little bit more, you know, and there's so much turmoil in the G1 regarding the immigration policies that maybe a good time to take advantage of, you know, Canada will be a safe and welcoming country for a lot of the talents around the world. And I would strongly advise government to maybe step it up. And it's been a good practice as far as I can see. So that's one thing. There should be job retraining. There are countries out there that have done a better job than others. You know, I understand that Sweden and Switzerland have done a much better job at retraining, vocational retraining, even when they were young. And so if the world, every 5 to 10 years, there's a major change of not only demographics, but they made a change of skill sets in order to be competitive in the market because of technological innovations. That's one area that I think we could put more attention to, and the government could spend a little bit more money focused on retraining and so forth. And then the private sectors could help out too. You could offer the opportunity for people to be retrained, offer the jobs for people to be retrained, not just to go after the best person for the most experienced person for the job. There are a lot of people who have really great background and great attitude. They could be retrained and to do the job that is required to do in the next 5 years.
You know, in preparing for this interview, a little research uncovered that you have a program with the Girl Guides of Canada to teach them cybersecurity. Now, that's not the Girl Guides or Boy Scouts that I would have thought of, but that's an interesting approach. Tell me a little bit about that program and its goal of ensuring digital literacy.
Well, it's really more focused on hoping to encourage the girls to be interested in science, the STEM part of the world.
Mm-hmm, the engineering, yeah.
But what BlackBerry could offer that is unique for anybody else is because our knowledge and security, particularly in cybersecurity, and we obviously strongly believe that's where the future is. And, you know, it, today we're dealing with cybersecurity like a new science. It's not, but that's how, you know, you get experts in cybersecurity and you pay a lot of money and then you recruit them. And so they're well sought after. You know, in about 5 years, 10 years, I think everybody that comes out of school, they already have some very basic good knowledge of cybersecurity. And we want the Girl Scout to have that opportunity to, you know, maybe start a little earlier. So it will be become part of their lives going forward. You like it or not, it's going to happen. So equip them to that.
It's a great program. And here too, I want to ask you, do you see that in other parts of the world, from the education perspective, you talked about the importance of the education system. I believe Japan is teaching their middle school kids AI. Are we adjusting fast enough? You just mentioned change could happen every 5 to 10 years. That's a lot of change if you just went to school.
Oh, I will go back to the point earlier, which was what could government do? And I think government and private sector could really collaborate to create this massive training program just to expose our people, young people, particularly, the possibility of technology. You know, you think about AI and modeling, the advances of that and the speed of advancement is mind-numbing. I mean, you're behind. And so, again, this is part of their lives. It will be part of their lives. It will be part of all our lives. AI particularly and modeling and threat detection, enhancement, recovery, and the list just goes on.
You've talked a lot about government, and we talk a lot about government and the relationship with the government on this podcast. But I want to ask you about the role that we can do without government. What can businesses, private sector, if you will, and universities and colleges and polytechnics do to sort of provide that labor force that you're looking for?
The one thing that really impressed me is the talent pool coming out from university in Canada. I said it in the beginning of this podcast. We had a very strong co-op program with University of Waterloo and other universities, but University of Waterloo in particular. We literally have 400 or 500 co-op, full-time co-op student in our shop helping us every day. And it's a very important part of our workforce for productivity. And they have a great experience. We treat them like just like a normal employee. And we're very fortunate to be able to retain most of them when they graduate. And so I think more of these programs, and it's already a good program that is known pretty much not only countrywide, but worldwide. It's certainly very well known in the United States. So this model, I congratulate whoever came up with this model, whether it's University of Waterloo or some private sectors or government, whoever it might be, it's really a fantastic program. And we should do it all across Canada and even beyond, but all across Canada for sure. And it requires a lot of collaboration with private sector. Now, one last point, and we get off this topic. BlackBerry has been investing in 4, 5, 6 different universities, Queen's University and other universities, Windsor and so forth, in University of Toronto. We've been working with all the universities and doing research and hoping to tap in their postdoc program and the postgraduate programs and professorships and all that. So I encourage any private sector company to take a very strong interest and activity at universities.
Well, I think you're going to be in good company coming out of this pandemic. It's certainly a big focus for private sector and universities, and there's a lot of room for growth and improvement there, but it's going to happen. I can't call this podcast Speaking of Business if I don't talk about the business of your business. We've covered all the issues around it, but you know, one of the things in COVID is you've heard the word pivot. It comes across a lot, and it often comes with the word acceleration, that everything's just happening faster and that you've had to pivot. You know, companies have pivoted to work from home. They're, you know, shopping's happening online. Friends and families are having virtual gatherings. But you, as the CEO of BlackBerry coming in, had to arrange for a major pivot yourself.
Yeah.
You went from basically being a hardware company to a software-focused company, although it still makes hardware products. I want to ask you, what lessons did you learn that might be applicable for CEOs who are having to deal with the pandemic pivot, if you will?
I'm going to ignore the pandemic for a second to answer your question, and then we'll come back to the pandemic if we needed to. The one thing that taught me in this particular turnaround, this is not my first turnaround, but the one thing that particularly learned from that is it's take much longer than I expected. And it's the patience that is required. And partly because I'm pivoting us into a very high growth market. You know, the way that BlackBerry is organized today, we have a division that focuses very much on IoT, especially embedded software into automobile. For example, we have 195 million cars around the world uses our QNX software embedded. We have 24 out of 25 electric vehicle producer that is the top 25, 24 of them uses BlackBerry technology in the new electric vehicle designs and so forth. So we're well positioned for the growth for the future. We're pretty big in that space and very well known in that space. And we're expanding it to other areas like medical fields and aerospace and et cetera, et cetera. The other one is the cybersecurity. And you can see both the IoT and cybersecurity are very high growth market. And now, what is the definition of high growth market? Well, other than the growth in volume of the business, it's also very competitive, both of them. Mm-hmm. So the pivot of moving from a hardware-centric company that are consumer-based to a software-centric company that are enterprise-based, you know, was literally a 180-degree flip.
Yeah, you went B2C to B2B.
Exactly. And we went from hardware to software and so forth. We kept our core focus on security, safety, now expanding it a little bit and functionality. So now, because of the two high growth market we identified and we could play in and we're playing in it, there was a tremendous amount of competition. So we all not only have to pivot this one big strategy, we have to keep pivoting in small steps to anticipate what's coming down the pipe. And sometimes we're successful and sometimes we're not. But one lesson learned, other than the patient, you really need to stay focused and stay on the course of what you believe in. And otherwise, if you keep pivoting and with not a central theme, you definitely were going to fail, or at least have high chance of failing. That is a number one learning that we should have. And we have kept very focused on the lane that we're on. And despite the fact that, you know, competition, we would feel that like a little bump on the road, basically. And so we keep pivoting, small pivot within the big pivot, if that makes sense to you.
But you needed shareholders to go along for that ride with you. So they had to have patience too.
Yeah, I am very fortunate that we have tremendous support of the shareholder base, at least till now. Maybe after they listen to the podcast and say, well.
Well, no, I was going to say, I don't want to be responsible for that. You've done a great job, John. It's been a real joy to speak with you. So throughout this season of the podcast, I've been asking everybody the same question. What is one big idea, just one big idea that you think could help transform Canada?
I know you're going to ask a question like that. And so not being from Canada, I've done a little bit of research. And amazingly, Canada already had a lot of transformational ideas. You know, we just need to follow through with a lot of them. For example, in 2016, there was an idea of clustering, you know, create super clusters of skills and common vertical businesses. And I think it's a super idea, but I just fear that it's not going fast enough. You know, we speak a little bit of idea of going global, and I think that's a public-private sector collaborations. You know, we speak about the idea of retraining our people, the entire population, to a higher skill level that are more relevant for the future, whether it's in the AI world, whether it's in the cyber world, and so forth. Not only with starting young, but people who is in the workforce today. Those are all mega ideas that could transform the competitiveness of the country. We touched a little bit about immigration. That probably isn't that big an idea as the other ones. You know, when I look at it and I say, wow, who am I to come up with this next big idea? But when I look at the past ideas, you know, and I took a lot of time reading the clustering idea, I think it's spot on. I mean, it applies in 2016, it's certainly going to apply today.
I think the people who are running those clusters will be delighted with your answer. But I also take away your point, and it's a theme that we hear on the podcast a lot. Acting with some velocity, some speed, some urgency. And the acting part is important too. You actually have to do. You can't just say so. Before I wrap up, you had referenced that maybe we would come back to this issue of overseas success.
Uh-huh.
What do you want to talk about there?
Well, obviously, if you look at the GDP of Canada, although it's the ninth largest GDP country, is in single digit, 3-4% of the world GDP. So that means that we have about 96% of the world GDP out there that we could tap into. And that will require us to be a multicultural, multi-global physical location company. And you need to invest in various parts of the world. And we've been doing so. We could do much more. And the government has been helpful. And we would need to continue to step up and do so. So I just want to encourage everybody on the call to understand the market is really beyond. It's out there and we need to go get it.
Well, you're out there doing just that now, John. Thank you for joining us on this. It's been a real treat. You bring me some memories of I think I have about 6 or 7 Blackberries in a drawer still because I want to keep the pins. You remember the pins?
Yeah, it's of course.
Those were the special features of the Blackberries in towns like Ottawa and Washington, I'm sure.
Absolutely. The pins. Remember the days that people exchanged pins?
You know, I will tell you this story because it was one of those times where you really appreciate the pin was through that famous blackout that happened. Everything stopped, but for whatever reason, the pins kept coming through.
Yeah, the pin-to-pin communications.
It was a way to communicate.
Yes, and the basic servers, other than the edge outside the country, they're all in Canada.
Yeah. Well, look, I don't want to end on the note of memories because what you've said here is there's a tremendous future ahead for BlackBerry. And it's just been a delight to hear your vision and the opportunities that you speak of. And thank you for making sure that BlackBerry remains a global Canadian success story.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
John Chan is Executive Chairman and CEO of BlackBerry Limited. John talked about the skills needed for the digital economy. We're going to hear a different perspective on the skills gap in our next episode when I speak with Dave Philipchuk, President and CEO of PCL Constructors. Here's a preview.
Our highest level of success in hiring for fit into our company is through our student program. So in Canada alone, we place over 600 students annually in our business. They learn about our business, we learn about them, and very often they're the ones that convert to permanent hires.
You can hear that full conversation with Dave Philipchuk in 2 weeks. If you would like to hear more of our Speaking of Business conversations with innovators, leaders, and entrepreneurs, why not subscribe to our podcast? Search for Speaking of Business wherever you get your podcasts. Or simply go to our website at thebusinesscouncil.ca. That's thebusinesscouncil.ca. I'm Goldie Hyder. Thanks for joining us.